Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to another episode of the Chocolate Puma Podcast. I am your host. I am the Chocolate Puma, back giving you what my loyal tens of listeners have been craving all week. I am here for you. If you would like to email the show, feel free to email me at thepumapod@gmail.com. If you want to follow me on the Twitter streets, where I am rambunctious, I am reckless, and I'm always coming in hot. That's at BTomp20. It's been a depressing couple of weeks, I would say. The world continues to be a dumpster fire, but you know what? We shall persevere. We will make it because we got each other. I'm being positive, okay? But I will, of course, have to talk about some things that kind of piss me off, because that's the whole point of having a podcast, ain't it? So I was recently just thinking on with the latest election results in Virginia, where basically the the now Republican governor of Virginia basically ran a whole campaign. There's another basically, take a shot if you're playing at home. He ran a campaign where he he ran an anti-critical race theory campaign, where he said that, you know, white children were being made to feel bad because they were being taught critical race theory. And that, as I have railed on here numerous times, is completely bullshit. There was a video that went viral a couple of days ago where a woman at a Loudoun County school board meeting is going on and on about how her child, who is 6 years old, came home and talked about how she was ashamed to be white and is it evil to be white. And I'm like, this did not happen at all. That would be like me saying that my four-year-old son came home and said, "Dad, why does the bourgeoisie class continue to get, you know, see unprecedented gains while the working class struggles?" That didn't happen. That child didn't come home because, you know what? The child wasn't taught critical race theory, not in the first grade, okay? If your child's in law school or some high-level graduate courses, then maybe. But if they're that smart, I'm sure they can handle that shit, okay? The whole critical race theory conversation, or yelling into the void, I should say, is always centered around the feelings of white children. Never any thought given to the black and brown children who, frankly, need to learn about this, because I don't see learning history as a bad thing, because it shows the strength of our people to get through what they got through, what our ancestors went through. That's impressive as hell, and it's something I think that should be celebrated. I'm proud of, like, my family members who were able to get through these awful times. I'm proud of, like, my mother who went to school, who went to a segregated school and had to do the separate the colored water fountains and couldn't eat at the counter and all that. That takes strength. That takes a level of perseverance to know that, like, hey, this is shitty right now, but, you know, in the future, we can change this. And through their work, things have gotten better. I'm not one of those people that's like, it's just as bad now as it was then. Like, it's not. Is it where we want to be? Absolutely not. But I think at times you have to stop, look around, and recognize the victories that you've made, the gains you've made. And ignoring history is the antithesis of that. I've seen numerous videos where these people are like, I am against critical race theory being taught to children. Well, what's critical race theory? Well, I don't know exactly, but I just don't agree with it. The fuck? Opponents of progress have successfully branded critical race theory as this dangerous thing that, you know, is gonna make white people feel terrible, which honestly, if you didn't feel terrible already with the stuff that we do know that happened, you're not gonna feel terrible if you learn about, you know, more of what actually happened in history, okay? I think we need to give white people a little bit more credit for their ability to handle learning new information, you know? And if they feel bad about it, then maybe they should feel bad about, you know, things that have happened. Like, I feel bad about, you know, when I hear about, like, how women couldn't get, you know, a bank account until 1975 by themselves. Like, that makes me feel bad. Like, I feel terrible for the women who had to stick around situations that they probably didn't need to be in, because honestly, there was no way for them to survive without, like, having a, basically a man co-sign for them. Like, that makes me feel bad as a man. It also makes me want to make things better in the future for women. Like, so anything I can do, you know, I wouldn't call myself like a activist or anything like that, but in any small way that I can help, like, I certainly do try my best. You know, I don't ignore, you know, the things that have happened. Which leads me to the next thing that's kind of like annoying me. And it is the black people who give these anti-critical race theory, anti-progress, anti-Black Lives Matter, anti anything black people, you know, kind of whites, gives them cover, basically, as their quote-unquote black friend. For instance, and I'm not saying that this guy is, you know, that kind of black guy, but he's being basically used as an example, like, well, this guy thinks this, you know. John McWhorter, who's a professor at Columbia University, he's a linguist, and he's basically written a book called Woke Racism, and it makes the argument that anti-racism, which he is against, which is a wild concept to me. Like, I don't understand how you can be against anti-racism, but I digress. He's against anti-racism, and he said that it functions more like a religion than an ideology or a political project. And its adherents are obsessed with performing virtue, not for the sake of societal change, but because of the purpose it offers them. And honestly, I don't care what your purpose is. If you are anti-racist, you all right with me, because it's absolutely ridiculous in the year of our Lord 2021 that we're still having to talk about this shit. But this guy, his whole style just reeks to me of someone who is jealous of other black intellectuals, particularly Ta-Nehisi Coates and Nicole Hannah-Jones. He talks about how when Coates wrote the article about reparations, he said, and I quote, "On Twitter, you have people crying, this is the most amazing article. And I remember at the time thinking, yeah, this is a good article, but the way people are responding to this seems to go beyond what I would expect, given that that reparations have been discussed a lot and vigorously. There was a whole book called The Debt that was discussed intensely for years, and yet Ta-Nehisi Coates writes this article, and people are writing about it as if it's the second coming. And it wasn't that I was thinking, oh, this isn't that good. I was just thinking, why are people acting as if he's opening up a conversation we've never had before, or that was only had, say, 40 or 50 years ago? And I'm like, okay, that strikes me as someone who's, he just comes across as hating here. Like, he's mad that he's not getting the props, the affection, the attention, the adulation that Coates and, you know, Nicole Hannah-Jones, like, she was sitting on a panel and someone brought up Coates and Nicole Hannah Jones, and it's like you could see like this visceral reaction, this eye roll, and I don't think he might not have even known he did it, but it's like he's using Coates and Hannah Jones as like almost slurs, like it's a negative to be like them, you know. So people like him, people like oh god, what are the meathead comedians, the Hodge twins, your Paris Denards, your, I'm not going to call them, you know, a coon or anything like that, but they do have coonish behavior sometimes, you know. That's, anytime you see someone who, whenever you bring up black shit, their immediate reaction is to go the exact opposite. Black people love a show called, a couple of years ago, when black people would get on Twitter and just have like a great time, like live tweeting, you know, Empire. Whole bunch of these people popped up. Oh, so you can watch a show about Empire. I'm busy building an empire. It's like, god damn, dude. Like, can black people have an hour? Like, it's just 1 hour out of the day. Like, 1 hour out of the week. Where we can just get in, just like, ah, this shit is bad. It's funny. It's entertaining. Like, let us do that shit. But no. So I don't even know how I got that down this rabbit hole. But yeah, I'm really annoyed lately. Like, to the point where, like, I get angry, like, just furious. More so at the black people that provide the cover for racists than actually the racist white people. Because, honestly, I've lived in America my whole life. Grew up in the South. My natural assumption is, if I meet a new white person, I'm going to assume that they're racist. Sorry. Just is what it is, and it's up to you to prove me wrong. Like, I'm not gonna be disrespectful to you. I'm not gonna, you know, disrespect your humanity. But I mean, we not buddies. We not cool. I have to see what kind of human being you are. Like, period. I remember Chris Rock had a joke where he talked about how he's not even mad at, you know, racists. He's like mad at himself if he gets caught off guard by racism. Like, he said, if Tom Hanks could walk up to him and stab him in the neck and call him, you know, a fucking nigger, and he'd be like, god damn it, I should have seen it coming. So yeah, that's kind of like where I'm at right now. Yeah, that's cool. Moving on, I'll talk about some other stuff, I guess, because that's starting to get me all worked up. This is a wild one. So the Chicago Bulls, they retired the jersey of Joakim Noah, had like a whole retirement ceremony for him. One of the best Bulls of my lifetime, and I'm super glad I was wrong about him. Like, when they drafted him, I was very, like, pissed off. I hated the guy when he played at Florida, and they just kept winning, and I was like, god damn, I hate this dude so much, he's so annoying. And then he comes to the Bulls, I'm like, fuck, this guy, he's just gonna be like this flopping jerk, he's not skilled, blah, blah, blah. And I was wrong. I was totally wrong. He ended up, you know, winning Defensive Player of the Year. He made All-Star teams. He made all defensive teams. He was the heart and soul of, like, our, you know, some of our best teams since the Jordan years. Like, Derrick Rose, you know, he was the MVP, but that team was kind of like, they fed off of, like, the emotion that Joakim Noah brought. So this week during his, like, press junket for, you know, his retirement, he talked about how when Derrick Rose tore his ACL, it was the year that they were the number one seed. They were expected to, like, contend with Miami. Like, they had been going back and forth with Miami in the regular season. They, you know, they were, like, the team that was kind of, like, built to stop, you know, Miami. There was, like, Derrick Rose and D-Wade could kind of go at it. You had Luol Deng, who of all the defenders in the league, he probably had as much success as one could have guarding LeBron. Not to call him like a LeBron stopper, because at that time there was no LeBron stopper. Still isn't really, but I digress. And then you got, you know, Joakim Noah holding it down against, like, you know, their low post guys like Chris Bosh, Udonis Haslem. So, I mean, we were in a great position, and Derrick Rose tears his ACL. We end up losing to the 8-seed Sixers. And it was just, like, deflating, but I thought I felt bad. I didn't realize how bad Joakim Noah felt. He said, "When I found out Derrick Rose tore his ACL, I remember the smells, who I was with, everything. I had the same feeling of when I saw the plane hit the tower on September 11th. People will be like, he's crazy for saying that. No, I'm telling you how I felt." Holy shit. Not something I would say, but Joakim Noah's always been one to say whatever the hell he wants to. you know, usually it's at the expense of the city of Cleveland, but this time he decided to dive into the waters of 9/11 imagery. Not a bold strategy, I'll admit. Not one I would do myself, but, you know, that's Joakim Noah for you. So I just thought that was a pretty interesting little soundbite there. But finally, I will end with, so yesterday, as of this recording, Aaron Rodgers tested positive for COVID. He'll miss this week's game against Kansas City. And frankly, I'm disgusted. So in August, he talked about how they asked, you know, directly asked whether he had been, and they being, of course, the press in Milwaukee, directly asked whether he had been vaccinated, to which he said, "Yeah," before adding, "I've been immunized." So the way he has talked about it, he's just been very untruthful, shitty about his vaccination status. Obviously, I guess his teammates might have known the NFL has considered him unvaccinated, but, you know, they don't have, like, a list that they release, you know, of unvaccinated players. But, you know, him saying, like, "I've been immunized," like, people kind of assume, like, oh, well, Aaron Rodgers, he clearly, he's vaccinated. He's always been kind of dodgy on the subject of the vaccine, and I just assumed it was one of those things where it's like, you know what, that's their business, I'm not going to get involved in it. He talked about unvaccinated teammates, where he said there are guys on the team who haven't been vaccinated. I think it's a personal decision, I'm not going to judge those guys. Those guys, he said, very interesting way he phrased it, because that implies that he's not in that group of guys who hasn't been vaccinated. I feel like this is worse than Kyrie Irving, because Kyrie Irving has been very open and very honest in his stupidity about not being vaccinated. You know, claiming he wants to do, like, it's, in a way, I can admire Kyrie Irving for standing on, you know, like, hey, this is important to me. I'm doing this to be the voice of the voiceless, all that bullshit. But Aaron Rodgers, man, he just appears to just be a selfish asshole. Like, that's what it comes down to. And then he's, you know, posting, you know, videos from a Halloween party from the last weekend, and nobody's wearing masks. He's in, you know, press conferences not wearing masks. And it's, he's like flaunting in the face of one of the most deadly pandemics we've had in years. You know, I've had family members who died from COVID. I've got friends and coworkers who have had COVID, and this guy just out here is just thumbing his nose at it. Like, it's disgusting, and it's why I say that we'll never get over this this pandemic, because I mean, this is just, you know, one case, but it's the selfishness is, it's something that goes through from professional athletes to, you know, your part-time cashier at, you know, Johnny's discount store. Like, it's very deflating, because, you know, I think I've seen my mother, 2 to 3 times maybe, in the last, you know, year and a half. I've seen my oldest sister once. I've seen my middle sister twice. I've seen my twin sister once. And these people are just, and it's like, just because I'm trying to be safe, I'm trying to kill this thing, I'm trying to end this thing by, you know, wearing masks, socially distancing, not doing the things that I would like to do. And these people are just doing whatever the fuck they want to do. And it's just really deflating. It's really deflating. And it's not that I had, like, these high hopes for Aaron Rodgers. But it's just that him doing this so boldly, and it's just bringing up a lot of frustrations, I guess. Maybe I'm just, like, projecting these frustrations onto him. But, yeah. I guess I better stop, because I'm starting to get... this has been a real downer. Damn, this sucks. I guess I'll just end it here. So, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Love each other. Hug your people. And I will talk to you next week. Y'all take it easy. Peace.